Great. Yeah. Let's get going. Yeah. Thanks everyone for coming to the Dev Room. Very exciting to see so many people around. Just want to give a shout out to the Dev Room organizer. That is myself, Nate from the Unitary Foundation. Sort of like Linux Foundation, maybe more modest than that, but for quantum computing. Unitary because if you know a bit of linear algebra, unitary matrices are important in quantum computing. And that's all the linear algebra I'm going to use here. That's the email if you have feedback for the organizer and Dev Room manager. So a bit of history on the quantum computing Dev Room. There were two editions, I think only two editions in the past, if I'm correct, 2019 and 2020. It was organized by the Quantum Open Source Foundation. It's another foundation that works on quantum computing, specifically by Thomas Babbage and Mark Fingerhut. And since then, there has been a four-year hiatus, a bit for, you know, COVID. And also, I guess people have been very busy building quantum computers, so they didn't have time to organize a Dev Room. But I can guarantee there was lots of progress in the last 4 years. Yeah, and this is a bit of an inception. So this was a talk by Thomas, their organizer. This was the welcome intro in 2020. And he was resharing a tweet of me from 2019 showing how many people there was. So as popular as this one. Yeah, unfortunately, we missed the last 4 years, but we are back. I'll give a quick intro just to set the scene here. So I'll talk in one slide about quantum computing for people who come from like classical Dev Room. I'll talk about why you need software for quantum computing, specifically why you need open source software for quantum computing, and why open source software for quantum computing is here at FOSDEM today. So quantum computing in one slide is basically a paradigm that uses some property of quantum mechanics. They are called with these three names. You don't need to know all the details, but some of you are from quantum, so they already know superposition, entanglement, and interference. Thanks to this awesome property of quantum mechanics, you can basically improve the speed and the security of computers for certain tasks. So there are many caveats in the last sentence when I say improve the speed and security of computers. There are many caveats, but hopefully in the talks of today, we will understand some of them. It's been an area of research for maybe more than 20 years, and we are approaching the time where we are trying to make this like feasible. We are actually trying to build quantum computer, and hopefully proper application and feasibility will come in the 20 years, in the next 20 years. I know that's one of the frequently asked question, when are we going to have application on quantum computers? So that's my answer at least. And right now we are in this era of noisy intermediate scale quantum computer, which means we are around implementation that have up to 1,000 qubits. The application, since I know you were going to ask, are like, you know, there is lots of hype on many, many application. I'm not even going to repeat those, but the actual application are cryptography. So you can actually compute the secret key from the public key of RSA scheme. So you can break some protocols for classical cryptography. Probably what's the most important is that you can simulate quantum systems, and this will allow you to design new materials, design new drugs, and apparently something that people really care about, design more efficient fertilizers. Lastly, there are some optimization problem that you can also speed up with quantum computer that are like things like routing and scheduling. So, but about software, so let's go through the job or the workflow of a quantum scientist, of a quantum engineer. So you come up with an algorithm or a protocol in this new paradigm. And you write it in a paper, in like a research paper, in a formal language. Usually it's something like, looks like this. So you can see this as something like a Boolean circuit, but more complicated than that. And then you actually want to run it on hardware, on like a quantum device. So there are many steps here. Well, first of all, when writing in a formal language means that you need to define the formal language, then you need to have something that compiles it. You want to test it first for at a small scale on like classical device, because you can do that, you can simulate it. And then you want to run it on hardware device. So that's what a quantum scientist or engineer would do. So, and you need some tools for this job, which are, first of all, coming up with algorithm, usually some algorithm that we use in this NISC noise intermediate here are like hybrid algorithms. So you need some classical programming as well. Things like error mitigation, BQA, which you don't need to know the specific, but basically you run a bit of quantum algorithm, a bit of classical algorithm, and then you iterate on that. And I also say you need to write in a formal language. So what people are doing these days is defining some domain-specific languages. This is probably what you've heard of, are things like Qiskit, Circ, all these big companies, but also like, I think we will see some of these languages defined. And you do have to define compilers because of step three. You need to define simulator, and these are all like things that you can write with classical software, like you can write these things in Python. Then you need to control the hardware, so only the cylinder there that you see is the quantum stuff. All the rest is like firmware that you need to control with like a classical toolkit. So how about open source then? Well, we are in a, it's a very interesting field for open source and a bit different from like other things that you see in other dev rooms, because we are still in a R&D phase. So I personally believe open source is even more important here, because we don't know yet what the correct approach is. On top of that, there are different approaches that different research groups, different companies are taking. So you do want to verify the claims they make. And you know, if you have more transparency, if you have like open benchmark, this is going to be easier. Finally, it's like we are rewriting a full stack of a computer from like the hardware, like laser or things I don't understand because I'm like not a physicist, but then you need to write like firmware on top of that. You need to write a compiler. You need to write like error correction, things that we wrote like 30, 40 years ago in like classical computing. And yeah, we have the chance to redefine the whole stack, so we may as well do it in open source way. Coincidentally, like a week ago or so, Bova and Melko came up with this paper where they described the economics of open source quantum computer, which is very interesting. The landscape is crazy. There are like 400 projects right now of only open source dedicated to quantum, not only computation, but device, cryptography, all these things. As a Unitary Foundation, we do run a survey with every year with 800 participants where we ask questions about quantum open source. And yeah, you can check it out at that link. And finally, at FOSDEM. So this is the schedule of the day. Some very interesting talk, and yeah, looking forward to them. And that was about it. Yeah, thank you. So I guess throughout the schedule, there are like 5 minutes gap. We are going to take some of the question at the end of the talk, and then maybe we'll run over a bit in this 5 minutes, but also use the 5 minutes to like leave the room if you decide that you don't really care about quantum computing, and like let other people come in. So yeah, if you have any question for me in the meantime, both as an organizer and specifically to the thing I talked about very quickly.
If I have an open source software that is built on top of Fortran, somewhere, I mean it's open source, public with Serialize open source, what is
it? If you have an open source software that is built on top of what, sorry?
Proprietary
hardware? I guess, I don't know if it's a question for me or like for someone from the, maybe some other open source policy dev room, but I don't know. I think that, you know, if it's on GitHub and it's public and it defines one of the layer I was talking about, I would consider it open source, yes. Yes. Yeah, that's a good question. So what the question is, what will happen with our bank accounts, credit cards that all rely on RSA cryptography? So I guess the answer is twofold. There is like post-quantum cryptography in like classical computing. So you can define protocols that are more complex than RSA. We don't yet know how well they perform because, you know, RSA has been tested for like 30 years. And there are not like theoretical proofs. It's mostly based on the fact that we don't know how to solve this problem. Like if you know how RSA works, it basically relies on this one-way function and we don't know how to reverse them. So that's why we use them. But we also know that we tried to crack them for 30 years and we didn't succeed. So we can write protocols that are robust against quantum computing. That's one answer. The other answer, magically, I said, magically quantum mechanics offers a way to do like cryptography, that some kind of cryptographic protocol that you cannot do on like classical, with classical protocols. So maybe you can use that. And yeah, I think the time is up. We will start in like 1 minute with the next talk.